Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we simplify the complexities of the UAE law and provide you with practical insights to navigate the legal landscape with confidence. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, managing partner of a Dubai-based law firm. And in today's episode, we're driving the intricacies of the property transfers in Dubai, covering various legal requirements, common pitfalls, key steps involved in successfully transferring property ownership. Transferring property in Dubai may seem straightforward, but it involves several key steps and legal requirements that can trip up even most experienced buyers and sellers. So in this episode, I will walk you through the entire process from agreeing on the terms to obtaining approvals and securing final title deed. We'll talk about the key regulatory authorities involved in Dubai real estate market and how they shape the entire process. And finally, I'll also cover some of the most common disputes that arise during property transfers and how you can avoid them. Okay, so let's start with the big picture. We're talking about real estate laws. Real estate laws in the UAE, and the UAE being a country of seven emirates, are very much emirate-specific. So in other words, every emirate has its own real estate laws. This is important to remember as you go through the process of deciding where buying or investing in the UAE and where to invest, perhaps. This episode will help you navigate your decision-making. And in particular, we're in 2025 now. To my knowledge, still not all emirates in the UAE allow foreign ownership. This is important to remember because, let's say, again, you know, I could be corrected on this. For example, an emirate of Fujairah does not allow foreign owners to invest and buy freehold properties. But then you have emirates like Dubai, which has had a very long-standing practice of allowing, or not only allowing, but incentivizing and motivating foreign ownership. Abu Dhabi as well has perhaps kind of followed Dubai footsteps closest. But it's very much, again, the ownership of real estate in the UAE is very much specific on the emirate. For example, until recently, well, perhaps not so recently, until a few years ago, Dubai perhaps was the only emirate that allowed freehold investment by foreign nationals. So Abu Dhabi, for example, much of Abu Dhabi real estate, at least until a few years back, was still leasehold, which is different from freehold. Freehold is when you own property outright without any terms and conditions, without any kind of expiration of term. Leasehold, there's this long leaseholds. In Abu Dhabi, they were 99 years, but they were still leasehold, not freehold. Now, much has changed in the last several years, but for the most part, those emirates which actively promote foreign investment now are all freehold or have converted from leasehold to freehold. But there are still some emirates that are still not open to foreign investment in the same way. In today's episode, we will focus on Dubai primarily, and that's because Dubai historically and certainly right now has been the most vibrant and most active emirate in terms of real estate development in general, and certainly foreign real estate investment very kind of active marketing efforts to try to attract foreign investment into Dubai. Certainly, there's a lot to be proud of in terms of what Dubai has been able to achieve in terms of creating this fairly unique real estate project and continue to evolve and then set new heights. With regards to Dubai, there is real estate laws are very, very much emirate specific, and Dubai has its own set of laws and its own set of authorities that govern real estate transactions. So in terms of the laws, the main law, starting from 2006, which was law number 7 that established the Dubai Land Department, which is the authority that authority over property registration and transactions. So that was back in 2006. It's almost 20 years ago now. When that law was introduced, and it was introduced specifically to monitor and register property transfers. Then there is law number 8 of 2007 that's very often and frequently cited by various real estate brokers and consultants in the process of property transfers. And this particular law regulates, set up basically regulations of freehold ownership by non-UAE nationals in designated areas. Now, how it was done historically and still to this point, to this day, although it's more seamless now, and that is that the presumption was that that foreigners were not allowed to own property or real estate in the UAE or in Dubai unless. So they were so any kind of areas where unless there was a specifically designated areas. And so there would be specific decrees that would be published designated specific geographic area as a freehold. And so in addition to these laws that that set up the original laws, kind of the underlying law number 8, that set up the freehold ownership legal framework, there were these specific decrees that would be issued over time designated different areas as freehold. And they would, as Dubai continued to evolve, more of these the circulars would come out designated more geographical areas as freehold for foreign nationals. In fact, just recently there was another circular that came out that designated one of the previously areas that was previously only owned or allowed to be owned by Emiratis into now freehold areas for foreign nationals. So that was along Sheikh Zayed Road. So that's just an example of how the legal framework that exists in connection with the real estate market in Dubai and how it continues to evolve. And then there is also law number 26 of 2007 that governs landlords and tenant relationships, including rental contract and dispute resolution. And this obviously comes into play in the context of property transfers because often properties are either tenanted. And so there is these issues that that is important that investors keep in mind as they go through the process if they want to buy properties for themselves in particular. And then there is there was kind of an addition to that law that was law number 19, 2017, that amended certain aspects of the tenancy contract and eviction rights in particular, which become relevant in the context of property investors who, once again, want to buy the property either to move in themselves or want to buy and use this as a rental income. And so it's important for them to know what rights apply to them and what rights and limitations perhaps they have in terms of being able to take possession of the property if it is tenanted. Okay, now in terms of the authorities that govern, again, we're talking about Dubai real estate market, that govern the various aspects of the Dubai real estate industry and therefore come into play when properties are being transferred, property ownerships are being transferred. The starting point is the Dubai Land Department, and that's or otherwise referred to as DLD. And this is the main regulatory body for real estate in Dubai, and it oversees all types of property transactions, including sales, leases, mortgages, and title registrations. And then it also sets the fee structure for property transfers and governs the requirements for property registration. So, for example, back in the old days, and I have been in the UAE and Dubai in particular for all too long, but in the past, perhaps more than 10 years ago now, the property transfer was 2%. Anytime you would transfer property, the property transfer fee that's paid to the land department was 2%, and then they increased it to 4%. So that's by authority of the land department, just to give you some context in terms of what DLD does. And also DLD is responsible for ultimately issuing title deeds and maintaining the official property ownership registry. That's where the title deeds are issued with the DLD logo and stamp on it, and that's where the repository of all property ownership data is located. And then there's the Real Estate Regulatory Agency, or RERA, again, a very ubiquitous term for those living in Dubai. And that's it's a division of Dubai Land Department. So think of it as like Dubai Land Department has this the umbrella, and there's under it there are different divisions. So RERA sits on the DLD, and it regulates the real estate market. So it sets the legal framework for brokers, developers, and property management companies, among others. And more specifically, it regulates issues such as service charges for each development for each community, and the maintenance fees in all types of freehold areas. It also manages the rental price index and plays kind of a mediator role in rental disputes. And then it also manages the rental, related to RERA under the DLD. There is RERA, and then there is kind of related to RERA what's called the RDC, or the Rent Dispute Center. That's another government authority that sits, or judicial authority actually, that sits under kind of the DLD umbrella, and that has a very close tie with RERA. And that's where, that's the body where one would refer any kind of matters or disputes related to service charges, tenancy disputes, one, but more importantly, in the context of property ownership, is service charges or any issues related to jointly owned properties. So that's RDC that governs those issues. And RDC, in short, is a rental court. So some of the specific examples of what RERA does is, for example, brokers in Dubai, they must be registered by RERA, and their commissions and their sort of contracts, they're more or less, and their code of conduct also are regulated by RERA. And the idea, obviously, in this context is for RERA to minimize, misrepresentation and fraud in the real estate industries by having an oversight of real estate practitioners. So that's the other government agency that's involved in property transfers. Now, a function of the last five or so years, it's called the trustee centers. And they didn't exist for the first many years that I lived in Dubai and practiced law, or at least not in the form in which they exist now. So the trustee centers ultimately is kind of like a subset of the land department in the context of either an intermediary between the parties and the land department. So this is kind of all the property transfers in Dubai now must go through the approved trustee centers. And in other words, it acts as sort of performs certain functions of DLD, Dubai Land Department, which in the past were exclusively performed by DLD itself. So it's like an agent, if you will, sort of that's been delegated certain powers by DLD, but ultimately, it has a central sort of database with DLD in terms of verifying documents and ultimately registering and issuing title deeds. So think of it as a subset of DLD. So it does things like verify documents and ensure that all, obviously, transactions comply with the Dubai Land Department regulations. They also collect transfer fees. These are the DLD fees that we talked about, which are now 4%. And then they submit all those documents to DLD, and then ultimately they issue the new title deeds to the buyer. Now, the role of the trustee centers has evolved in the last few years, and in the past, for example, just to give an idea, first, everything would happen at DLD. All these property transfers would happen under the same roof in the same building, and which resulted in very long lines. And it would take sometimes months before a title deed would actually be issued. So these days, because there are many more of these trustee centers, so the land department is for that reason, because the real estate obviously, investments is such an important part of the Dubai economy, and there's such an increase and constant increase, it seems, of new real estate investors coming into Dubai. So it made more sense to create, in the interest of the investors, to create multiple trustee centers to allow for these property transfers to happen much faster, much more expeditiously, and much more conveniently located in different locations as compared to how it was before, where there was just one place that you had to go, and sometimes these transfers would take all day. Now you have a lot more trustee centers, and new trustee centers are being opened up around Dubai on a regular basis. And there are a lot, as time goes on, especially with Dubai continuing to embrace the digital transformation, the digital sort of domain, a lot probably is an understatement. Perhaps all transactions now are digitally done and digitally documented, which means that the trustee centers have almost immediate link into the DLD in terms of verifying documents and ultimately issuing title deeds. Because when first trustee centers were formed and they started managing these property transactions, there would be quite a bit of a delay, sometimes several weeks between the transfer process itself, the transfer date, and the date on which the title deed would be issued. These days, they're basically issued there on the spot. And that's because title deeds are now no longer manually issued in the form of an original document. It's actually, there's a QR code, so it does not really need sort of a special printer to be printing these original documents. And so there's just an example of how trustee centers are coordinated and integrated with the land department and RERA in general. So that's another government authority that's involved. Another one is the notary public, and the notary public comes in the context of property transfers when, let's say, the seller wants to be represented by somebody else to sell the property or to at least manage the transfer. So, for example, if the seller is not in the country, they can designate someone else, a representative, to sell the property on their behalf. So they would need to issue a power of attorney, and that's basically done through the notary public or the UAE Ministry of Justice. Or even if the seller is here but just doesn't want to deal with the nitty-gritty of nuances of property transfer and wants somebody else to go on their behalf to represent them, they can also issue this the power of attorney for this purpose. If, for example, the buyer wants to be represented by someone else, so also they would need a power of attorney specifically to represent them in these kinds of matters. Now, so that's, and these powers of attorney, or POAs as they're otherwise called, are being issued by the notary public, which basically sits under the Dubai Courts umbrella, or there's another option, as I mentioned earlier, it's the Ministry of Justice, which is the federal judicial authority that also issues powers of attorney. And there are two different ways of obtaining the POA. It's either by physically going into the notary and obtaining it, or online. So this is where the evolution continues to sort of manifest itself, and Dubai's evolution in particular, in terms of embracing all these modern tools and technology for the benefit of the investors and the consumers. So it's a lot easier these days to obtain powers of attorney because you can do it all online. Again, it's through the notary public, through the Dubai court system, the Dubai courts portal, that service in particular is available to those who have UAE residency, or if they're delegating the power to somebody with a UAE residency. But those without any kind of residency, for example, they have the option of the Ministry of Justice to obtain POA. Now, one thing to note is that, and that's also a function of the evolving Dubai real estate, is that if the seller wants to be represented for the purpose of the purchase or the sale of the property, the seller wants to be represented by somebody else ultimately to sell their asset, that power of attorney has to be very specific. It has to be specific to that property and that unit. So in the past, the seller would often just give this general POA with all the powers and didn't even have the expiration date. And those are the POAs that would be used a lot and often abused and misused by brokers, for example, who would delegate powers and then, properties were being sold without the seller's ultimate sign-off. Anyway, so be it as it may, today's requirement is that if the seller wants to be represented in the property transfer by someone else, they need to indicate in their POA that they are authorizing their representative to sell this very specific property for the specific title deed, and they have to also show to the authorities the proof of that title deed. So it's not just that they can mention any kind of name. So this is an important aspect to remember for those who are planning to invest in Dubai and perhaps either considering delegating their powers to somebody else or are working with somebody that other than the seller or the buyer directly. So just bear in mind that any time that somebody is representing or alleges to represent either the buyer or the seller, that they need to have a properly notarized power of attorney. So so once you've decided to buy the property, so the first step, and this is, I cannot emphasize this enough, is the importance of due diligence. So do you do diligence as properly and thoroughly, and as basic as it may sound, it's a very important element of the transaction in order to ensure that your expectations are in line in terms of what it is that you think you are buying or want to buy, and in terms of what how quickly you planning to complete the transaction. So in terms of due diligence, you just make sure that you understand what property you're buying in terms of that specifications. That would be reflected in the title deed. And also the title deeds these days also have additional documents, kind of specifications of the property, like I call the site plan. So make sure that you understand what it is that you're buying. If you're buying from the developer directly, understand what kind of specification that property will have. In other words, if it's a property that's still off plan or is still being developed, obviously you don't have the ability to go and see it in the same way, but understand what it is that you're buying. Is it two bedroom, three bedrooms? What's the size? You know, what's included in the size? Is the balcony or the terrace included in the overall size? And so on and so forth. And, you know, is it furnished, for example, or not furnished? Are there any other restrictions? And then for those who are buying ready properties, due diligence is very important. Still, you don't be afraid to go and look at the property. And I always recommend to also hire special contractors to go and inspect the property for you, so that you know that there are no sort of hidden issues. And often they do happen. So to give you some examples from our personal experience. For example, we had a client who bought an apartment, a fairly expensive condo, and then only to realize after they moved in there that because the condo was located like right above the garage, every time the garage door would open, the whole apartment would shake. Or a similar case of apartment that was located next to the air conditioning room, like the building kind of centralized air conditioning and utility room. So the entire apartment would either shake or create all sorts of noise. And, well, that's not an issue that you can ultimately use in order to invalidate the transaction because you did not do your proper due diligence. So due diligence in terms of the property itself. I understand what it is that you're buying. Also due diligence in terms of who you're buying it from. So who is the seller? I mean, make sure right away ask for a copy of the title deed and a copy of the passport, the seller. So you make sure that you know who you're dealing with, that property that you think you're buying actually belongs to that person, and that person, in fact, is available or going to be involved in the transaction. Also, if you are buying the property for yourself or as a rental income, you need to understand whether it's rented, because if you plan to move in yourself, then you need to know that if the property rented in Dubai, you can't just evict the tenant on the spot just because you're the new owner. Dubai does have very specific rental laws that require for owners of properties to give tenants at least 12 months notice before they are required to evict. So we've had a lot of issues and disgruntled clients coming to us over the years where they did not expect, they bought a property because they planned to move in there themselves and live there with their families. They did not expect that they either the property was tenanted or rented to begin with, or that they could not evict the tenant right there on the spot. So make sure that you know that part of the equation, and if it's important to you that the previous owner at least would have provided the tenant with the eviction notice on the basis of sale. So this is very important. Make sure that you ask for the copy of the eviction notice and that you read the eviction notice and you see what's in the eviction notice, in particular that it includes the reason for eviction is property sale. Now, there was a time until recently where it wasn't quite clear whether these eviction notices would transfer from one owner to the other, but that has now been settled. And the short of it is they are transferable. In other words, if the the original owner gave the eviction notice, then whenever the new owner comes into place, they can benefit from that eviction notice. And the other part of due diligence is a broker and the representatives that involved in the transaction. The broker should, if you want to do things right or safeguard your interest, the broker should be RERA registered. You should know who the broker is, which brokerage company they work for, what their RERA number is, and all the different brokers that are involved. And if you are, for example, dealing with representatives of the seller, that you also have copies of their POAs and know exactly that, you know, have the assurance and confidence that they are in fact properly delegated these powers to represent the seller or even the buyer in this regard. So the next big part, obviously, is the agreement itself. So you've decided you want to buy this property. You have the broker. You decided you're going to work with the broker. With the broker, there's usually, depending on who you're working with, but the broker has, you may be required to sign a brokerage agreement with the broker specifically. So that's an important part of the transaction, because you need to know that, obviously, the real estate broker, so they are expecting to get a commission. So it's a good practice to know, to have some sort of formal relationship with the broker, so that you know on what basis your relationship, who they represent, the seller or the buyer, what their commission is, and who is expected to pay the commission. So make sure that you have that. And then let's say once you have the broker, you identify the property, you know who the seller is. Now you need to agree on the terms of the transaction. And so the first document that usually sort of kind of floats around in the industry is a document called the Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU. That's the ubiquitous term that's used quite frequently. And the MOU, it's drafted usually by a specific broker or brokerage firm. Expectedly, it would include the purchase price, the payment terms, including the deposit and the final payment, the property details, the timeline for the transfer of the property, and also the penalties that might be associated in the event that the transfer date gets shifted, and then generally any kind of other penalties that may result in the event parties change their mind and decide to go their separate ways or ultimately breach the agreement, and also I guess the form of jurisdiction in the event of the dispute. I cannot emphasize this enough. You know, MOUs, unfortunately, all too often, for the time being in Dubai, are still drafted by real estate agencies and real estate brokers. But it is a legal document, because it is a binding document. So MOU is a binding document. So it's important to remember that whenever you sign a legal document, I mean, in the very least, you should either understand it yourself and should make sense to you if you've got some sort of legal background, but it would be prudent for you to have it reviewed by lawyers, because it is a legal document. If it's either reviewed by lawyers or at least if not drafted by lawyers, but at least reviewed by lawyers, so that you understand what you're getting yourself into, because it is a binding document. And why it's important in Dubai in particular, this is kind of a nuanced practice in Dubai, and that is, in most cases, it's the practice has developed such, this is practice, not by law, and not required by law, but in the practice has developed such that whenever parties sign the MOU, the seller is expecting for the buyer to give a deposit check, you know, upon the signing of the MOU. So that's why it's not just signing of a document, but in most cases, when you sign the document, there's expectation of the exchange of ultimately your guarantees. Sometimes, in most cases, the deposit is not small. It's usually 10% of the purchase price. This is not mandated by law. This is just the practice that developed in Dubai, and to this day, it's still very widely used. So, this 10% deposit is usually given by way of a personal check, and it's that's in the name of the seller, but it's usually held by the agent in trust. And the idea is that it's a kind of guarantee or like the security to guarantee a specific deal for the seller, so that the seller does not, so seller's interests are covered, but also the buyer also knows that that property has been reserved for them. And so the practice is such that although the check is issued in the name of the seller doesn't get a copy of it, the broker does. That's an important part of the equation, because if you're signing the MOU and it's not, you either don't understand it or it's not very well drafted, you need to understand that when you sign it, you also exchange your check, and then in the event something goes south, or in the event you want to back away from the transaction, you need to worry about that check, because that check that you issued is in somebody else's hands. While it's the broker has no right to give it to the seller in the event of a dispute, only the court can make that determination. Still, this is your check that is in the hands of someone else. So it's important that you understand what you're signing, and you're comfortable you're signing, that you know that you can commit to going through with it. My preference is not to issue deposit checks at all, because they're not required by law. Unfortunately, this is where lawyers get involved most often. It's not at the outset of the transaction, kind of at the forefront of the transaction, unfortunately. In most other countries, when you go through this, such an important decision in your life, you do consult a lawyer first, and you do actually have them review all these documents. Here, unfortunately, that's not the practice. Most of the time, we lawyers get involved is when parties already have a disagreement, and in most cases, the disagreements do come down to this deposit, because one or the other party decides to go separate ways for good reasons or not. But then that deposit checks ends up being the issue. Recently what we've seen is also the form of the deposit check is now not just a personal check, but we've seen the actual requirement of a manager's check. A manager's check is like cash. You're ultimately giving, in order for you to issue a manager's check, you need to go to your bank, take that money out and issue out of your bank account, and then issue a check to in the name of the seller, which once again will be with a broker, but that's money's out of your account. So that's another level of obviously risks and liabilities for the buyer. So I caution you once again first of all, against that practice to begin with. And if you do proceed with that practice, then, or any kind of issues with the deposit, that you consult with a professional beforehand. Now, another part of kind of the sort of, it's part of it is due diligence, part of it is agreeing on the terms, but make sure to exchange documents. There has to be a thorough document exchange at the outset. So if you are a buyer and you're trying to buy property, you need to have a copy of the title deed, right? And you need to have a passport copy of the seller. Those are the starting points. And as basic as it may sound, a lot of the times, and we are managing a few transactions right now as we speak, is just your parties are almost scheduling a transfer date and the buyer still does not have a copy of the title deed because it's confidential. That's that doesn't make any sense. It's not logical and it's not proper, and parties should certainly, and this certainly should not be issuing any manager's check or any kind of security checks to anybody until they in the very least have those basic documents, which is the title deed, the seller's title deed, a passport copy of the seller. If somebody else representing the seller, it should be the power of attorney. So that's the very least before you sign any MOUs, and certainly before you issue checks. Similarly, as a buyer, you should be expected to provide the same documents, passport copy, Emirates ID, and then the power of attorney if you're being represented. So ultimately, as part of the transfer, the seller will have to submit other documents, one of which is what's called the NOC, or no objection certificate from the management company or the developer. And that's basically signing off on the fact that that seller is now transferring their ownership to another seller. As part of the NOC, the previous seller will have to clear any kind of service fees or any other issues or late payments or any other penalties with the management company or the developer before they would issue the NOC. That is a mandatory document that will come up in the property transfer process. And then, you know, from in terms of the practical aspects of what to expect in property transfers, in addition to the documents, it's obviously settlement of any kind of financial liabilities. So I mentioned already service fees or any penalties, late penalties, or whatever outstanding payments to the developer or the maintenance company or management companies. Also, it's important to know whether the property is mortgaged or not, right? Because if the property is mortgaged, then the bank will also have to be involved along the process. Or the seller can pay off the mortgage and then sell the property outright, but that happens much more rarely in Dubai than the other way around. So it's usually the mortgage is being settled as part of the transfer process, where part of the buyer's money goes straight to the seller's bank. And then the rest to the seller, and then the property. So it's like a tri-party transaction. So that's an important element to know. So when you are considering buying a property, make sure that you know that that will, by the way, be reflected in the title deed. So if you have a title deed and the property is mortgaged, you will see that on the title deed. So you need to factor that in, because when you bring in another party into the equation, obviously in terms of timing and document management, it's another sort of complication, if you will, another element that you need to account for. So don't expect for property transfer to happen too quickly, because you will, in addition to all the NOCs or no objection certificates that you will require from the developer or the management company, such as service fee clearance, you also need to clear, or the seller will also need to clear any kind of utility accounts, for example, DUA, district cooling. These are utility providers in Dubai. In addition to all that, you'll also now need to have the bank involved to also make sure that they understand that they've kind of cleared the transfer process and their role in the transfer process. And that's not to mention if you, as a new buyer, are also planning to take a mortgage. So if you also bring a mortgage and it's yet another property, that's another element of complication. So make sure to factor that into the transfer. Once you have all these documents, as I mentioned earlier, the convenient thing these days is that you can basically schedule a meeting at the trustee center ahead of time. You can even send them the documents ahead of time to the trustee center, so that when you're there on the date of transfer, the transfer can actually happen quite quickly. So you have all these documents at that point in time, you have the money sorted. So since the trustee center now is so well integrated with the other government authorities in terms of verifying the documents and also issuing the title deed, the property transfers can happen just within the matter of a few hours, if not an hour. So it can move quite quickly, and that's the convenience. Another aspect in terms of owning or buying property in Dubai to remember is fees that you need to pay. So as part of the property transfer, when you're buying property, there's a 4% fees that you'll have to pay to the government. Now, the practice has evolved such that in most cases, it's the buyer that pays the full 4%, although the law states 2% and 2%, but parties, you know, the practice has developed such as parties agree that the buyer pays the full 4%. So the seller basically just sells the property as is, and then the buyer pays the 4% to DLD, and that's the check that they will have to issue, a manager's check that they'll have to give to the trustee center on the day of transfer. And then there's the broker's commission, so that's why you need to clear that very early on, so that you know on the day of transfer, most brokers would want you to also settle their fee at that same time. So and brokers, they're a little more flexible than the trustee center in terms of the form in which you can pay them. So if the DLD fee, the 4%, has to be paid by manager's check, the brokers can get paid manager's checks, personal checks, or cash. So that's, you know, that's something to keep in mind. Plus, there will be some transfer fees that you need to pay to the trustee center, but that you can pay with a credit card. So that's a lot more flexible. So that's kind of the process of transferring property in Dubai. Now, just bear in mind that there are some more common grounds for dispute, one of which is if the property transfer is being delayed, parties kind of often want to know, what can we do? Can we, as a seller, can I charge extra or a penalty as a buyer? Can I also negotiate a discount from the seller if the seller is not cooperating? So that's one. The deposits, that's a big issue, because in most cases, if the transaction for one reason or another does not go through, the deposit becomes at the core of the disputes, and that's where we lawyers unfortunately get involved most. And that's just, you know, in most cases, the interests of all parties are protected at a high level. That's a sort of topic for another day. It deserves its own episode. But at a high level, the party's interests are protected, because ultimately the deposit check does stay with the broker. And now the practice has developed such, and it's been pretty clearly adjudicated in many Dubai courts precedents, that the broker acting as a trustee and holding this check, they have no right to give this check to one or the other party, because that's a dispute. And if there's a dispute between the parties, it's not for the broker to decide what to do with the check. They're obligated to hold that check in trust, and only the courts can adjudicate what to do with that deposit, if, you know, and how to manage it. So at least if you're issuing a personal check, you don't need to worry about that check ending up in the hands of the seller if you're a buyer, because the broker's not allowed to do that. Now, if you're issuing a manager's check, as I mentioned earlier, that's a bit of an issue, because that's money out of your account. So my recommendation, not to issue manager's checks. And then sometimes the other disputes are obviously related to the brokers, because often brokers either want a higher percentage of brokerage fees. By the way, the law in Dubai there's no law that defines or sets a cap or a minimum for the broker's fees. The common practice is 2% or 3%, more likely like 2%. Often brokers take 2% from both sides. So whatever it is that you as a buyer or seller want to do, make sure that you understand with the broker and the other party who is paying the fees. Do you have two brokers involved? Do you only have one broker in between, which is also common practice, a subject for a different episode. Just have that be clear from the outset, and when you expect it to pay that commission to the brokers, because that's also one of those issues we've had recently, disputes where the broker ultimately is kind of holding the transaction hostage, because expecting a payment from the client, in this case was the seller, and wanted a higher payment that the seller was prepared to pay, and so the broker ultimately was kind of holding the whole transaction hostage and delaying it. And because often the broker is also in between obviously the two parties, the broker is always in between two parties, but often what they do is they withhold information, so the parties don't have full information, and therefore they have often no direct contact with each other. So therefore, in this particular case, that was what happened, is that the broker was able to hold the transaction hostage in the way, because the parties didn't have direct contact with each other. So these are some of the main issues. But I will tell you, just whatever it is, it's not worth going to court over this. So that's why it's so important that you, whatever documents you sign, the MOUs, or ultimately there will be this form that's issued by the broker called the Form F, and that's, as you know, once the parties have agreed on the MOU and kind of preparing with a property transfer. They will have whatever these forms are, whatever legal documents you're signing, you should sign them. You should have them at least reviewed by lawyers so that you avoid these kinds of disputes. Because in most cases, our advice is that it's just not worth going to court. It's not worth going to court for a number of reasons, and we can talk about it again in a separate episode. But the idea here, when you're trying to approach this transaction, it's a transactional matter, right? So there should not be dispute, there should not be sort of room for parties to argue, because it's a friendly transaction. So therefore, just make sure you understand what you're signing, what you're doing, who you're dealing with, so as to avoid having to pay legal fees and court fees later to try to get back your deposit or to try to get the property transferred to you, because there's a lot of nuances about that as well. So Yeah, at this point, I think I've given you enough tools to go by if you want to buy or sell property in Dubai. It's a great market. It's a great industry. So lots of great properties, but you need to be safe and you need to be wise about what you do. Be informed and continue to learn and continue to be vigilant. Okay, that's it for today's episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you're looking to buy or sell property in Dubai or need help navigating the process, feel free to reach out to us at LY Law. Thanks for listening and see you next time.